The Disciplined Investor Podcast is underwritten by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges U.S. dollar margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.59%. Rates, of course, are subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare. And this episode is sponsored by Our Crowd, where you can invest in pre-vetted startups and exclusive venture funds. Join for free at ourcrowd.com/TDI.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Face-ripping short squeezes, IPO madness, and spectaculars. Yellen is all in on debt finance stimulus. And it was a nice week for equities. Plus, our guest today, Steve Sanders, Executive Vice President of Interactive Brokers. All this and much more on episode number 698 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Yeehaw! You see some of those crazy moves this week? I feel like I was at a late night frat party with unlimited alcohol and plenty of togas to go around. The party was lit. I mean, seriously, there was a crazy week and incredible action within the markets. Hey, I'm Andrew Horowitz. I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, also a certified financial planner. Been doing this, well, for a while. I mean, back to the late 80s. And if you believe that, I know I sound a lot younger, right? Well, anyway, so here we are once again, kind of trying to dissect and understand what's going on with markets. There were some really interesting moves and news on the week. Yes, we have a new president and his administration is already hard at work signing plenty of executive orders. And I was thinking about that because I remember when some of the past presidents got in and started doing those executive orders that don't need congressional approval, everybody was kind of up in arms. You know, when Trump was signing away, it was like, oh my God, can you believe he's usurping Congress and, you know, going and trying to be a dictator and all that. And I guess, really, this is nothing new. This is what happens. The power is there, and therefore they take it and utilize it in which way they feel fit, whether we like it or not, whether we believe it or not, whether we agree with it or not. But I guess it's all about what side you're on, and maybe we can kind of put a little bit of this to rest because that's what happens. So far, not many of the specific executive orders that were signed are really market moving. Kind of just some clarification. Yes, there was a stoppage of any further pipeline build and wall is going to be defunded and a few things that we may not like or we may like depending on where you are on that discussion. But the fact is that, again, right now, not much in the way of anything more. Big thing that's really coming up is the idea of the stimulus. And we're seeing some things already walk back with that. The idea that, you know, we'd put out all of these new rules and regulations, whether it's a face mask mandate, whether it is trying to somehow get these vaccines out there. Some of this is being walked back. The idea of eradicating the COVID quickly is now, well, maybe this is not a good time to say that because we're seeing a continuation of the surge, variants and mutations that may or may not be more lethal, but yet more contagious. And the $1.9 trillion stimulus plan that was ready to go may now be a skinny deal. Because they don't think they can actually get through Congress the whole plan that they're putting on there. Specifically, there was the idea that the mandatory federal minimum wage is probably not going to get passed. And they don't want to hold up some of the other things like the $1,400 direct stimulus payments and a few other items. So I think what that's going to end up happening is they're going to try to do a piecemeal approach to getting some of this done in order to get money out there. And that was, you know, I don't think that was anything that was a surprise, because we know where each side stands on different things. And with that, you know, I think it's better to try to get what you can through and then fight and negotiate and deal with the other stuff later. So the probability is the $1,400 checks and a few other items like some new PPP will go through, but there's still big hope on stimulus. In fact, last week through the confirmation hearings in the Senate, Janet Yellen, who is now looking like a lock for the Treasury Secretary, was talking about big stimulus. And more importantly, hey, don't worry about the debt. Let's not worry about that right now, because what we need to do is get the economy back in order. We need to make sure people have money, those that are out of work, those that have no jobs, those that have businesses that have been crushed due to the pandemic, the lockdowns, the stay-at-home orders. And let's just spend. Because, well, interest rates are so low and they're going to stay low for a long period of time. That's the signal, right? The signal by the Fed of saying that the interest rates will stay low at these levels, at the zero bounds, through 2023 is a signal, because that means that the U.S. government can borrow at very low cost. And as such, what they're going to do is borrow a lot at very low cost, therefore putting it into some kind of stimulus. And Janet Yellen is now firmly behind that effort. So now we have a Treasury who is pushing for the Fed to print more money. And it looks like a Fed who is committed to keeping interest rates low, and an administration that wants to spend money. You know what that means? Well, they're going to spend a lot of money. And yes, this is inflationary. Don't think that it's not. It's negative on the U.S. dollar. And these levels that they're talking about, we're not talking about, you know, $250 million will be. No, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about $200 billion. We're talking about $1 trillion at a clip. And while the U.S. dollar did pick up a little bit this week, it's still in a confirmed downtrend. There's no question about that. And when we look at what the impact is going to be long term, you have to look at, well, how is this going to affect pricing? How is this going to affect inflation? And this is why some of the alternative assets have been doing so well. Bitcoin had a problem last week. There was a big downstroke, down about 10%, approximately down 10% off of the lows. It was down about 23% at its lows from its high. The recent high at about 42,000 into about the 10,000. And then actually, when you calculate the high to the low, the totality of it, so that's 31% before it started making that comeback. So much for this idea of a store of value and a currency alternative. I just think that's total hogwash. I do believe, for those of you that love Bitcoin, hey, great investment. Let you do your thing with it. You want to play with it. You want to buy it. You want to hold it. But the idea, the insanity, in my opinion, that this is a store of value, a currency, store of value against a dollar that was rising ever so slightly last week, where gold really didn't budge. And asset prices went up in terms of risk assets. And you see a three-day absolute bloodbath in the area of cryptos. It is not my particular preference to have mine or my clients' money in that as a store of value, not an investment, different discussion. Speculative investment, whatever you want to look at, as a store of value, a place where I can place money that I know is going to be there. You know, can you imagine having your emergency fund in Bitcoin? Now, yes, it would have made a lot of money recently, but if all of a sudden you want to tap it and it's down 25% overnight, that kind of doesn't make you feel really good, not comfortable. That blows the whole idea of it's a good place to store money for safety. Now, I know there's different definitions. I got that. I know the true believers out there will look at this and be like, Horowitz, what an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Look how great it's done over the lifetime. Yeah, there's some dips of 30, 40, 50%, but look how it comes back up 200% a year on average since inception. I get it. You want to have it as an investment? I have no problem with that at all. But to try to bridge this to be a store of value and all that, I just think there's something not quite right about that. And this, some of the stuff that went on last week, by the way, is part of the predictions I made at the end of 2020. I really only said two things that I was really coming to mind. And that was, number one, there would be some discussion and regulatory action on the cryptocurrencies. And that was played out when Janet Yellen discussed in her Senate confirmation hearing that she believes that there's a lot of nefarious activity that goes on with cryptos, and therefore they have to look into this. And I think that was the start of the awareness that, oh my gosh, maybe something's going to come down the pike. And the other one that I said was that there's going to be some regulatory action, or at least a look into the SPAC market. So I think that is, I think these are two things that are very viable when you think about how these regulators, politicians are looking at things. And I think when we look at that, we have to recognize that there is, in fact, this potential for them to look in, especially when we see them moving as much as they have. Now, as we look back to what's going on actually in the markets right now, I hope you listen to DH Unplugged this week. If you haven't, go make sure to look at it on the site over at DH Unplugged, the most recent episode. I don't remember the number, but the one from this week, from the week of, what was it, the 19th, I think? It was a discussion in there. There's a chart in there as well about, hey, what is going on in one chart? Like, what's happening with markets? What's happening with the world in terms of why there's so much liquidity in the markets? I found this really interesting chart related to U.S. personal income and how now the totality of income that we have on a personal income standpoint is way above pre-pandemic levels. And a lot of this is because of the stimulus that came into the markets, right? You know, between the unemployment insurance, between the PPP programs, the direct payments, the extension of employment insurance on the federal basis, all these things that came in pushed up the U.S. personal income, the total U.S. personal income in April. It just spiked higher and it's come down a bit, but we are still well above the February numbers, the January numbers. And going back to 2019, we are well above trend of where U.S. personal income was going, with the fact that we still have 6.7% unemployment rate, a recent 900,000 initial unemployment claims this week, a million last week. So it's kind of interesting that there is even more coming now. Another $1,400 check, another enhancement, extension of the unemployment insurance, all things that are needed, no question about that. So it's making for a very liquid environment. And, well, of course, that makes for opportunities. Now, that doesn't mean totally throwing caution to the wind, right? Just totally, saying, hey, what the hell? I'll just throw it out there. But we have to realize there's always opportunities. And if you know where to look, both short-term and long-term, you know, with this kind of liquidity that's going to last for some time, kind of an interesting setup. And I think one of the poster childs in this area with the idea that, hey, you know, markets are doing well and you can never lose is what happened with GameStop last week. That move last week was unbelievable. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. I think it's a pretty interesting dynamic that happened with GameStop in particular. And we're going to go through that and discuss it. And I want to talk to our guest as well, because I have some important questions about the brokerage industry. But before we do, as we're looking for ops, I mean, let's talk about our crowd. Because I guess if you're like a lot of people, you wish you were in early on some of the best performing IPOs of 2019 and 2020, right? Well, our crowd investors were, and now you can join them in what's next. With our crowd, accredited investors have access to invest directly, easily, and most importantly, early. And our crowd investors have benefited from our crowd companies IPOing, like Beyond Meat and Lemonade, or being bought by companies like Intel and Nike and Microsoft and even Oracle. And if you're thinking about looking at alternatives, once our crowd has selected a deal, they offer accredited investors the opportunity to invest alongside them with the same terms. And today you can join our crowd's investment in Future Family, the fintech innovator removing the cost and complexity barriers of fertility care. as they transform the rapidly growing and the multi-billion dollar fertility care industry, Future Families products give everyone the opportunity to build the family of their dreams. You can get in early on Future Family and other unique opportunities at ourcrowd.com/TDI. That's Our Crowd, which the account, by the way, is free. ourcrowd.com/TDI. All right, time to dial in our guest today. Let's see what he has to say. And our guest today is Steve Sanders. He's the Executive Vice President of Interactive Brokers. And I want to bring Steve on because we've been talking about a lot of areas related to, you know, how do you actually get ahead? And some of the things that we've been talking about are, well, kind of basic. And I wanted to go a little bit more advanced and talk about some of the areas that are lesser known in the world of finance by a lot of people, especially if you're just starting out. You know, how can you take advantage of this and how can you really work with this? And just as a quick disclosure, I've been working with Interactive Brokers for the better part of 10 years for a lot of our clients, as you know. And I thought that, you know, hey, why not bring them on, kind of find out a little bit more about what they're doing as well as get some insight. So, Steve, welcome aboard. How are you?
Thank you, Andrew, for having me today.
So I thought, you know, first of all, let's go back on your history. You're the EVP. You're kind of up the ranks on Interactive Brokers. Tell me about your background. Kind of how'd you get there?
Well, for 15 years, I worked for Citibank, both on the consumer side and the institutional side, managing risk on the trading floors. And my final position there was starting an options exchange. And this was around the internet bubble. So one of my investors was going to be Thomas Petterfee of Timber Hill at the time. And because of the internet bubble, the options exchange didn't form. I was looking for something new. And Thomas took me in 20 years ago to form his new nascent broker, Interactive Brokers, which got its start from Timber Hill. And that's how I ended up here.
I didn't know that the beginnings of all that, because I know that obviously Interactive Brokers was one of the first doing a lot of things, right? There's a lot of firsts that Interactive Brokers did, you know, in terms of very active in the options area, very active in technology, right? One of the first, if I'm not mistaken, didn't they have one of the first like trading systems or handhelds or something back in the day for,
yes.
What was that?
Yes. So anyway, we got our start as an options market maker, Timber Hill. We had traders on the floors, and we had memberships all around the world. Thomas was the inventor of the handheld, and this handheld would price options on the trading floor so that the traders could get an accurate pricing on these options. Now he built this device from scratch in those days. This is going back to 1979. There was no such thing as a tablet or you know a smartphone with a screen. And so he built this thing from scratch, and that really gave him the advantage on the trading floors. And in about 1993, he made the decision that because he needed all the technology, not only to execute option trades and stock trades and clear them at the lowest possible price, since he built all of this, he would take it and he would offer it out to like-minded people in the industry who might want to take advantage of this. And basically what he was offering was three things. One, lowest possible cost. Two, breadth of product around the world, which means stock options, futures, forex, and bonds around the world, as well as the best technology. And he started peddling this to former floor traders and people that were really advanced in their trading. And over the years, this has expanded to others, such as sophisticated investors and institutions such as hedge funds and advisors and brokers.
So the really interesting thing that you mentioned there, I think we need a little further clarification is, you mentioned, you know, investments, global investments, right? A lot of people think of, oh, if I want to invest in a global investment, I'll find a mutual fund or an ETF. But you're talking about something different, I think, when it comes to investing globally, right?
Absolutely. We invented what we call the universal account, which means that you can fund your account in one of many currencies and then trade all around the world. So as an example, if you're sitting in Hong Kong and you're a Hong Kong resident, you can fund your account in Hong Kong dollars. And if you had an interest in trading in the US, let's say Google stock, you can do one of two things. You could either convert those Hong Kong dollars to US dollars to buy the Google stock, and we'll convert it at the best possible rates. Or you can buy the Google stock using your Hong Kong dollars as collateral against the loaned US dollars. So depending on the currency risk you want to take, you can go in either direction.
You know, we've done that for clients. We've had clients, like, for example, from Australia, and they came to the United States, but they want to keep, for whatever reason, at the time, the Australian dollar was weak. And they said, you know what, they don't want to convert it to dollars. Can we continue trading in their local currency before we actually find a time to make it palatable or reasonable or profitable to actually convert it? And that's worked out pretty well because you have that availability of it's almost invisible. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like not there, the whole currency issue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Right. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are going on in the industry. You know, we have this whole idea that came on board a number of years ago, and I still, to a degree, can't believe it was actually approved and accepted, which is this free trading, right? And which kind of, I don't know, in my eyes, kind of flies in the face of best execution to a degree. Or it could be conflicting, I should say. But what are investors really paying these days? I mean, you know, the thing is that we have choices in certain firms that we work with. We work with several different firms. And, you know, we've decided that we're not going to utilize the quote unquote free trading for clients if we have the choice not to, unless there's something miraculous about it. But, you know, there's no such thing really as free trading, is there?
So we were the first. Robinhood was really the first with the free trading and selling their order flow out. And for years, Thomas was touting the benefits of smart routing and best execution. So we were the first of the major firms to come out by offering what we call IBKR Lite. IBKR Lite is just like what Robinhood was doing, whereby we would charge no commissions and we would sell the order flow to the market makers, so, you know, to cover the cost of the commissions. But our idea was not to enable it for all our clients, but to give clients a choice. So we kept our traditional with the smart routing, which we call IBKR Pro, and we introduced this new IBKR Lite with no commissions, and we route the order flow, and we introduced that on a Thursday back last September. And by the next Tuesday, all the other major firms were offering no commission
caved,
trading.
But caved is what they did. They caved in.
Caved, right. But they did it in a different way. What they did was they just decided to offer it out to all their clients, okay?
Right.
So given we have this bifurcated offering, those who choose IBKR Pro, according to IHS Market, which is our outside audit firm, would save 47 cents per 100 shares versus the industry in cost by using our smart router. So if you're a trader who's maybe trading three trades a year, yes, the market makers will take a little off the top and you'll lose a little bit, but for three trades a year, it's not going to matter. If you're like our average trader that's trading 450 trades a year, that 47 cents per 100 shares is going to matter a lot. So that's why we offer both, and I think there is a place for both.
You know, it's funny because I've been around long enough to remember quarter spreads, which it wasn't that long ago, to be honest with you. And I know, and I had friends that were actually market makers before the advent of all the technology that could pretty much do all their jobs. And they were making money hand over fist because basically they would take positions on known securities that would be trading throughout the day, knowing that they could kind of pawn it off at a particular price and pocket the spread of 25 cents or more. I mean, minimum 25 cents, right? Quarter spreads. You know, you used to have things that we used to call in the market, you know, eighths and teenies. Remember the old teenies?
Yes, I certainly do. That was another way for market makers to make money.
Right.
But all of that is gone.
All that's gone. And so are the market makers, by the way. But that was kind of the early days of kind of, in a way, payment for order flow. But can you explain what exactly is payment for order flow?
So the order flow, which is information on what retail customers will be doing in the future, is sold off to these market makers, and they use that information to trade against that order flow. So certainly, you know, market orders are of interest. Certainly when you put stop orders in, that's some kind of an indication of, you know, what people are thinking. And the market maker uses all that information to devise their own strategy for, you know, trading their own book and making money.
So stop orders, that's kind of interesting. Stop and limit orders. You know, it used to be that was kind of hidden. But on the free platforms, because it's out there, it's then advertised. Is that a correct statement?
Well, because when the order flow is sold, the limit orders, the market maker gets that information.
Did they get it beforehand?
They get it when the order is submitted to them,
right?
With that limit order,
right?
So that's information they can. That's very valuable information.
So that's why market orders, limit orders, to a lesser degree, limit orders, but stop orders. You got to be careful. Do things like, folks, do things like, you know, be careful. Round numbers are something that a lot of people psychologically look at the stop levels. But always, I tell everybody, put it a little bit lower. Also, look at stop limits. Make sure that you're getting the price that you want so that it doesn't get away from you. And look at market orders very carefully because, you know, it's just as easy to put in a limit order, even if you want to put it above or below wherever the particular action is. But in order to do so you don't get it taken out away from you at the wrong price because maybe the stock is thin or whatever. Just something on the side for everybody.
Right. So, all those things matter. They absolutely do. The other thing that we always tout here, I mean, stop orders can give you a false sense of security because when the market is falling rapidly or advancing rapidly, it will blow through your price. So there's no guarantees, right?
Right, exactly. So one of the things that I know we've been talking about, you and I, offline, but also one of the things that's of interest right now is some of the lesser known areas in kind of just not investing per se, but kind of the things you could do inside your portfolio to enhance your income. So one of the things that I know that has been a big something that a lot of clients at IB like is the stock loan programs. Again, it's for the right client, but talk to me a little bit about stock loan programs.
Yes. So anything that tends to be opaque is an area for a broker or a market maker or somebody else to make a profit, and people will always dive into that opportunity. So one of the last really opaque areas is with stock loan and borrow, because basically when you have to borrow shares, especially hard to borrow, you really don't know till it shows up on your statement what that cost will be, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's not really advertised in a transparent way. So what we do with our platform, any of our clients can, once they log into our trading application, they can not only see the inventory available for borrowing and how much inventory is available, but they can also see what the price would be for borrowing, because we make that very transparent to the client, and the client will know before they make the trade, rather than, you know, borrowing those shares and then discovering the next day how expensive it could be.
Mm-hmm.
So that is certainly an area to watch out for, and certainly something we provide to our more sophisticated types of clients.
But one of the things that you could do is if you want to make extra income on your portfolio, and let's assume for a moment, let's make an assumption just for a second here, that you are, let's say that there's part of your portfolio that's buy and hold, and you have X number of shares of some stock, especially those stocks that are a little bit more volatile and more thinly traded. And there are a lot of people out there that want to actually short the shares. Well, you can put your stock in for a stock loan program approval, right, and get a piece of the income that is generated from the guys that are doing the shorting, the charges that are being put to them back to you.
Yes. So let's just go through this a little bit. When one opens up a margin account at a broker, okay, mm-hmm. and you borrow on that margin account, that gives, according to Reg T, that gives any broker the opportunity to lend your shares out. But there's income that comes in on those shares, but that income is never shared between the broker and the client. It's another profit center for the broker. What we offer is anybody with a cash account or who isn't borrowing from us in a margin account, the ability to lend out their shares if they sign an agreement with us. And when we lend those shares out, we will divide up whatever revenue we get from the other broker 50-50, 50% for us and 50% for the client. So certainly for general collateral, there isn't a lot of money to be made there, but with more of the hard to borrow stocks, there could be substantial revenue for doing nothing.
Yeah, and obviously the stocks can go up and down, all things can happen, but if you are committed to holding that position and for at least a period of time, you know, the good news, you don't have to, but you can. And this whole thing is called hypothecation, by the way. That's the fancy word for the hypothecation of your shares to utilizing it on the other side. You're not mandated to hold the position, but as long as you do and there is income coming in, and some of these names have some very significant income streams. I mean, we're talking about like 100% per year of potential if they're significantly hard to borrow security or a fast mover, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, interesting.
That's correct.
So you talked about margin. You touched on this thing, and I think there's a lot of misunderstandings about margin. And one of the things that I try to educate is there's a differential between margin and leverage. While one encompasses the other and they're related, there are substantial differences. You know, the opportunity to leverage up a portfolio, in other words, $100,000 portfolio buying $150,000 worth of security, is done through margin and through leverage, right? So far so good?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So the mechanics of margin, in my mind, there are two purposes for it. The first one, as you mentioned, is for leverage and for people that like to take a lot of risk and leverage up their portfolio and hopefully make the most amount of income, although there could be substantial losses, they get into margin. The second use of margin is a way to borrow cheaply if you're with the right broker. Now, we tend to charge 1.59% or less. It's a blended rate. Our chairman, Thomas Petterfee, is in a number of advertisements asking the world why, if we're so low versus the other brokers who generally charge from 2.5% all the way up to 8%, why everyone wouldn't be with us. But that's another question. But the mechanic here is as follows, okay? So you own a bunch of Tesla or Google stock, and you need to borrow some money, you know, to buy a TV, to buy a car, whatever you want to buy. So certainly you can take out a home equity line of credit. You can, charge on your credit card and revolve. You can pay down your mortgage less. You can do all of these things to borrow maybe that money that you want to borrow to buy the car. The other thing you can do is you can borrow against that stock that you have in your account, and you can borrow at 1.59% or less and withdraw that money and go out and use those proceeds to buy the car. So for many, that is a...
Yeah, that's an open line. That's not like... I mean,
it's an open line. The only thing you need to be concerned about is if that stock price decreases,
right,
and you don't have enough of a cushion, that there would be a margin call. So certainly we, you know, the clients can see within their application, you know, how much cushion they have. But that is the risk that would be associated with something like that.
And the other thing that
I want to mention, yeah, on this, we have a debit card hooked up directly to the broker account. We don't do it like other brokers where you have a separate bank account with a credit card. So you can use your debit card to borrow against your stock at any time and go out and buy a TV. And if you have enough money in the account, it will just take the money out of the account. And if you don't, you'll borrow against your stock at a very low rate.
Now, first of all, number one, the two words that are put together, margin and call, when you hear those two words, I don't know, send a shiver down my back, you know, when you get a margin call. But you got to be careful, obviously. You don't want to rip this higher up into levels where it's ridiculous. But the other thing that's really important and how do you use this is, I think I like to talk about this and call it an administrative type of use. So, for example, you mentioned you can borrow money up against it. That's number one. Number two, you know, the certain portfolio margin that IB has that others don't, by the way, that you can do things inside of an IRA that you can't do inside of other IRAs or other firms. I'm just telling you straight out for folks. The other thing that's really interesting is, you know, when you have stocks in your portfolio and let's say it's fully invested and for whatever reason, maybe taxes, you don't want to sell something, but you need $5,000 because you're going on a vacation or whatever it is, you can utilize for a short period of time. It doesn't have to be a long period of time for kind of a bridge loan, this margin. And then eventually, let's say when the time comes to sell that, because you don't want to take those taxes maybe this year, you'll want to wait for next year, you know, you could do so. So there's a lot of, I guess we'll call it, it gives you the opportunity to have a flexibility. That's the point.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
However, you know, the only warning here is check what your broker's rate is.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to be paying 8%, that's certainly not a good deal for the end client.
Not. One of the other things that I thought was really interesting that I want to share with everybody is that, you know, this is something that is starting to gain a little bit of traction, but you guys have been doing it for a while. And it's the idea of education because, you know, I think that a lot of people get in this, we'll call it a game for a second, and that's what they think it is, you know, the gamification of investing and not really understanding what it is. That's more like speculating, in my opinion, you know, buying these stocks. You know, when I see a chart of the small caps with no income, right? In other words, companies that are not making money, outperforming, skyrocketing, and moonshotting above every other company in the small cap, that puts a little bit of a concern to me that why are people doing this? Why are people buying bankrupt companies, et cetera? But what you have to do is get educated. So one of the things that IB has is this Traders Academy. I've seen it. I've used it. I've been on it. But there's like all these great tools that you have. I mean, there's great charting. There's rebalancing. I mean, listen, a lot of brokers have a lot of this stuff. But I think the Traders Academy is kind of a really cool thing that you guys have.
Yes. So the Traders Academy can be found at tradersacademy.online. Or it can be found from the Interactive Brokers website. And what it is, we have close to 50 courses on all types of things, products like options and the pricing behind options or how to use some of our tools in other webinars. ESG is also another course we give. So generally, these courses are made up of 2 to 12 short lessons. The short lessons are generally a 5-minute video and then a quiz at the end of the short lesson. And at the end of the whole course, we have a short test. You know, obviously, you know, this isn't going to get reported to anybody. You know, we hope it's a good learning experience to, you know, to learn these things. But we
no report card coming home in the mail.
No
that mommy
report
has to see.
Card coming home. We won't tell you, you know, your partner, nothing like that. So anyway, we put it out there as a service, not only to IB clients, but to anybody, to the general public. because we believe our best client is somebody who is completely educated in what we have to offer. So we have had this for a number of years, and we just keep building on it and adding to it.
Yeah, I think it's important everybody needs to get an education in this, because while right now there's a lot of things that are converging in the markets that we've been talking about for weeks now, folks, right? We've been talking about this, like, whole idea about diversification, one foot in, one foot out, you know, giving yourself meaningful opportunities, not being nervous, watching emotions, making sure that you understand what is going on with your own level of risk and your time horizon, all these things we've been talking about. But, you know, at the same time, if you're going to either work with somebody, you still need to understand the market principles and what's going on, just generally speaking, right? Doesn't mean that if you buy a car, you have to understand all the mechanics of everything that's going on in the air conditioning system, the electronics, understanding everything that's happening on the circuit boards. But, you know, just kind of at least how to turn it on, off, what it means when this is happening, when that's not happening, and et cetera. So education is really important. All right, finally, I want to wrap this up with what do you find that most people are trading right now? Because I'm kind of curious about this. Is it, I don't know, is it crypto? Is it options? Is it futures? What are most accounts trading?
Most accounts are trading, and this is just, you know, due to our particular audience. And just to go through that a little bit, it's a little more sophisticated, right?
Yeah.
And also, more than 80% of our new applications now come from outside the U.S. So,
wow, 80%?
Yes, 80% new applications.
Wow.
So we are truly a global broker. But our clients trade everything, and we've seen an increase in everything. Stocks, options, currencies, our electronic bond offering, futures, you name it, there has been an increase in almost every asset class. Crypto, we do not offer the cash instrument. We have crypto futures on the CME.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Those haven't been, I wouldn't call them, you know, huge, huge products.
Right.
There is some trading in them, but it's, we it's do a, not it's have
still a
cash.
It's still a thin market.
It's a thin market, but we do not have cash crypto.
So
that is the one asset class we don't have.
Have you been talking to Tom Petefi about the, you know, what has been, you know, what's going on? Like, why are all these accounts coming in? What is happening? Why is there all of a sudden a love affair with the markets again?
Well, you know, there are a few things going on here. Number one is COVID. So more people are at home when, you know, there was less sports, you know, they wanted to be able to, you know, do other activities. If you know, you can't go out to your favorite restaurants and do the things you want to do, this is something that you can do from home, and it's easy to do. The other thing I would mention is that whenever there's volatility in the markets, there's more accounts. In my 20 years here, it's always worked that way. And when markets are moving sideways, there are less accounts coming in.
Right.
And the other thing I would mention is as we discussed before, huge increase from accounts outside of the U.S. So there certainly seems to be an interest in people from all around the world, maybe because of the COVID factor, in getting into the markets, especially the U.S. markets.
Well, I was going to say, that's the other thing, that the U.S. markets are something everybody wants, and how do you really gain access on a lot of other brokers that are outside the U.S. that don't have the global capability and capacity to manage that inside of there? That's a problem.
That's absolutely correct.
I can tell you, I've worked with other brokers, and you start mentioning another country, and they're like, no.
Right. Open a different account.
No.
Get the currency in. It's difficult.
Very difficult.
We make it easy.
Yep, exactly. All right, Steve Sanders, Executive VP of Interactive Brokers. We're going to have all the information on the things that we discussed here, of course, and some of the links over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, episode number 698. So make sure to check that out. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you very much, Andrew. Have a nice day.
Thanks. Some good information there, and that was great. Love having these guests on. We have next week coming up Ross Gerber. Probably going to be talking about Bitcoin. We'll probably be talking about Tesla. We'll talk about some of his favorite picks and all that. So he is a heavy, heavy EV bull. So we're going to talk to him about that. And then following up, Anthony Pompliano, the Pomp, talking about cryptos the following week. So plenty in store for education and for information over the next few weeks. Now, before we talk to Steve this week, I wanted to get back to this story. I don't even know what to call it. What happened with GameStop this week? If you haven't been following some of the things that went on, it's pretty remarkable because there was pretty much a vendetta, a price that was put on someone's head, figuratively, to try to bust them out, you know? So there was a lot of buzz around a Reddit message board, subreddit on GameStop, on Wall Street Tips, I think it was called. And it started. We started to see a little bit of a short squeeze that everybody's talking about. Hey, you know, this great update that was happening. And this, we had an activist involved in trying to help the company that talked about how the management was doing a terrible job and they were going to help fix it. And then they came out with an interim report that there was better sales on some of their devices. And there was a lot of little things that happened along the way. And all of a sudden, the stock got going. You know, from the 15, 17 range, all of a sudden gets into the 30s and 40s, and then it starts going. And then Andrew Left from Citron, a pretty famous hedge fund manager, a newsletter writer, very famous for his short picks, came out and said, hey, this stock is going back down to 20 at the best, because, you know, you look at the debt they hold and all the things that he laid out from a fundamental standpoint on the company's business and the management, all that. Well, seems that he got in the crosshairs. You know, this is Andrew Left from Citron. They started going, talking about how they're going to let's crush Citron and, you know, get from where we are because he is short and try to really, you know, squeeze this whole thing. Stock went from, again, 18 last week, moved to about 40. And Friday, it was as high as about 76. Now, we tried to sell some of this and short this on Thursday. Got out by the end of the day, small loss before Friday's monster move. Wasn't going to hold this for a long period of time. It wasn't going to break down. And it did come down to about the 60-ish range by the end of the day Friday. But still, this move from 18 and even a little bit less over the last month or so was pretty amazing. Now, the truth is that this stock is being manipulated. And I am certain there's going to be an investigation. Because the questions that you have to ask with what went on here is, who's really behind this whole Reddit, the army that was really pushing this? You know, when we think about Reddit oftentimes, at least I do, I think about individuals putting on messages and boards and, you know, do we really know though? Do we really know who's really involved in this? And do we really know also all the other players that are playing along? You know, could it be that there's this bucket shop that hired, or PR firm or whatever you want to call it, that hired a lot of people to start doing crazy posts on a particular stock, trying to get this to go? I mean, we've seen this before in different variations for decades. Could it have been just another one of these hedge funds or other you know, money flush investors with a PR team and ganging up on it? I mean, the stock doesn't have the fundamentals, and even if there was a go private or maybe even acquisition possibility, would $60 or $70 price be the price paid? I don't think so. So surely for those of you that maybe got on board, there's a great time and you're making a lot of money, but you got to be suspicious that probably the company, especially with an activist involved and with the stock at this price, there's going to be a secondary coming out. I mean, I would think with all this insanity with the price move that we've seen, the company would say, you know what, let me take advantage of this. And you know what? You don't even know who in the company could have been involved with all this. I mean, the whole thing stinks to high hell, frankly. Now, whether or not they were going after Citron, what happens afterwards? What happens with the hangover? Because I'm going to tell you, there are going to be some bag holders on this. So let's mark 76 as the recent high. That doesn't mean it can't go above that on the continuation of a short squeeze, but I would venture to say the powers with the massive amount of money are going to continue to short this position for a while, realizing that long term their play will probably be good as long as we see that the usual happens, which is that eventually the Reddit boards will get tired of it, or whatever boards that are out there. It's not just Reddit, okay? And I think the lesson here is that there are plenty of boards that can play on all sorts of different things. I mean, we saw this happen also for years on the cryptos, right? All the incredible amount of bullishness and holders and all the comments and new language that came out and the almost religious nature of what they were doing. But I think it's also important, I think it's to recognize, maybe if you haven't thought of it, that we really don't know who's on the other side of the trade. You know, the anonymity and general ability to hide your identity can, you know, provide a pretty well-obscured way of someone just trying to pump up the stocks. For those of you that cashed in, hey, that's great. Congratulations. For those of you that are still holding, maybe it will kind of move up with you. But, you know, the fact is that you have to really recognize what's going on here. We've seen this. Look at the stock chart on a company like Tilray, you know, T-R-T-L-R-Y. Look at the just the craziness that went on there and what happened. Look at, you know, the thing like, you know, Kodak, what happened there. Look at Hertz, HTZ. You know, these are the same plays that are going on, but you know eventually that there's going to be a dose of reality that hits. Same thing with markets. You know, we're looking at 23 plus PEs on the S&P 500 and, you know, crazy numbers. As we get into next week's major earnings news, that'll be coming out with over 100 companies from the S&P 500 showing us their cards next week, what really happened, and possibly outlook, possibly not. You know, they've obviously taken the opportunity to cancel guidance in the wake of the pandemic. But right now is an interesting time to really think about what is moving certain positions out there. Don't walk into and head on into a bus that's coming right at you if, in fact, there is no fundamentals underlying it. If you want to trade it short term, if you want to believe that there is upside opportunity because of all this, yeah, that's great. Again, I don't have any objection to investing and speculating, but understand what is what. Understand the difference between long-term investing for your financial security and speculating and trading. As long as you have that understood, do it, you know, go for it. Do what you want to do. I have no problem with that. Really, no problem. And I don't think you should either. I don't think anybody should. Anybody that's, you know, telling you you're an idiot for going long GameStop in this whole thing, well, why? I mean, if you're making money with it, that's great. But just understand where those levels are that maybe, hey, I made some profits here. There's no underlying fundamentals that are good. There's $1 billion worth of debt outstanding. The model itself is kind of broken. What's the best can happen if it's going to be bought out and taken out, go private, kind of, you know, manage the risk accordingly. But really interesting overall, and I think it's something that you should take a look at and how that played out and look at the storyline. You'll see a lot more news about this over the next week or so. And then there'll be, a postmortem on all of this when everything calms down a bit on it. And there'll be some interesting discussion about this in the future. Hey, that's going to wrap it up for today. I want to thank everybody for joining me. Have a great weekend. Have a great week ahead. Lots coming in terms of economics, some important numbers that we're going to be seeing. FOMC rate decision next week, GDP. We'll see some housing numbers as well. And we're going, of course, to see hundreds of companies and the big boys, the big tech companies, several of them coming out with earnings. Is there anywhere like IBM's and Intel's? You know, markets are going to be a little concerned, but let's see what happens. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you around next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz and Company.